Okay, hi everybody. We are entering our esoteric astrology adventure number 30. And we have been talking about the coming of the solar angels, and DK said he placed that stupendous happening in the age of Gemini. Age of Leo, Cancer and Gemini, really, but beginning in Leo, some 21,688,345 years ago, and we have determined that we are speaking of precessional ages. This is what we mean by the sun in Leo or the sun in Gemini. We do not mean the month, because it took about 5,000 years for the sun to move from Leo to Gemini. And that's just about right when considering, as DK sometimes does, an average precessional age as 2,500 years. That's probably 2160 with overlaps. Then we are told the door was closed upon the animal kingdom, and this was in middle Lemurian times, but 3 million years before the man, animal man, awakened to the event that happened, and the hierarchy, or Shambhala, as we wish to think of it, was established because of the coming of the Lords of the Flame, Sanat Kumara, and his 104 Kumaras, which established the hierarchy of that time. We went as far as page 64, and moving on now, DK tells us it has been stated that Sagittarius governs human evolution, as the sun was in that sign when the hierarchy began its approach in order to stimulate the forms of life upon our planet. But again, we have to ask what is meant by the hierarchy. Perhaps we mean the hierarchy of solar angels. On the other hand, you know, this has some interesting ideas connected with it. Sagittarius, however, governs the period of the subjective approach. The sun was in Leo when physical plane individualization took place as a result of the applied stimulation. So it is the date of individualization that we are given in this 21,688,345 years, and even earlier, perhaps, was a Sagittarian subjective approach. Although there is, interestingly, a line, arrow, says, shot forth. Yes. This is from A Treatise on White Magic, and it tells us that the sons of God shot forth like arrows from the bow. Now, that's a very Sagittarian imagery. It has to do with the process of individualization. The forms receive the impulse, and lo, a god was born. The tiny babe knew not the great event. So, are we dealing with Sagittarius, Scorpio, Libra, Virgo? That is 10,000 years if we use the 2,500-year span to indicate a precessional age. Here it tells us a little bit about that individualization. The sun was in Sagittarius when the first human tendencies struggled to the fore, presumably in animal man. The stage of animal man was completed, and when Sagittarius was dominant from our planetary standpoint, I'm using the words with care, So does that mean a great processional age from a planetary standpoint? The great event of individualization took place, but the brain of the then human being failed to register what had happened. And then the words of the old commentary, the sons of God shot forth like arrows from the bow. The forms received the impulse, and lo, a god was born, the tiny babe knew it not. This took place 21 million years ago. This is a rounding off, of course. Cycles passed, and when at a later date the sun was in Leo, approximately 18 million years ago, the first instances of coordination between brain and mind took place, and the human being was definitely self-conscious. He registered his individuality. The figure for the first date, though exactness is not possible in a system of mutations such as ours, are 21,688,345 years ago. These figures, he says, are useless at this time, for they can neither be proved correct or incorrect, but later investigation will prove their usefulness. So Sagittarius governs human evolution, for it symbolizes progress towards a conscious goal. Leo governs the human consciousness in the human kingdom, for the energy pouring through it enables man to say, I am. Well, when we go back here to esoteric astrology, it does seem to say that the individualization, let's see, the great approach of the hierarchy to our planetary manifestation took place. Let's see if we can find this here. I earlier gave the hint upon which definite astrological computation can be based. When I gave the time of the great approach of the hierarchy to our planetary manifestation, when individualization took place, that event was that event occurred 21 million years ago, and at that time the sun was in Leo. Well, he tells us the sun was in Leo at that time, and the sun was also in Sagittarius. So you begin to wonder whether we are talking about a great age of Sagittarius, a Platonic year of Sagittarius, when the processional age was that of Leo, going to a smaller processional age of Cancer and then Gemini, because otherwise there seem to be some contradictions. The sun was in that sign when hierarchy began its approach in order to stimulate the forms upon our planet. Now, another way of viewing this is that 10,000 years before the actual individualization, whatever hierarchy means, I think the hierarchy of solar angels, actually, Sagittarius was the sign governing a lesser processional age. So we either have this great processional age of 25,000 years ruled by Sagittarius, during which the lesser age of Leo was the time of individualization, followed by the lesser age of Cancer and Gemini, or we have the idea that a subjective approach occurred 10,000 years before the individualization in Leo, and that was governed by Sagittarius. But DK definitely does connect Leo with that figure, 21,688,345. So anyway, he tells us Sagittarius, you see, it's not as straightforward as we may think. Sagittarius, however, governed the period of subjective approach. The sun was in Leo when physical plane individualization took place as a result of the applied stimulation. But up here, DK tells us that I placed that stupendous happening at 21,688,345, and at the time the sun was in Leo. So he seems to be talking about a subjective approach involving Sagittarius, and also at that figure, and also an objective individualization involving that figure. And I have suggested the ways to try to solve that problem. The sun was in Leo in one respect, but from another respect, Sagittarius may have ruled the age, and he does say, let's see, how does he say it here? The figure for the first date, though exact is not possible, are 21688, and Sagittarius is definitely involved. Here's all the Sagittarian energy. But notice, Sagittarius was dominant from the planetary standpoint. And does that mean a great age from the planetary standpoint? So this is unresolved, but at least we know that some 21 million years ago, there was a great approach which occurred, and that until the sun was in Leo again, 3 million years later, the brain of animal man did not awaken to the manner in which it had been stimulated, and the I consciousness was not established, even though the link was made between the solar angel and the brain, and the solar angel and the mind. So there was a latent I am consciousness, which later awoke. Here it is. The brain of the then human being failed to register what happened. Cycles passed, and at a later date, again, the sun was in Leo. How interesting. Approximately 18 million years ago, we wonder, you know, whether it was 17 million and something, because we are told that the Temple of Ibez, which was the first Shambolic outpost, was established some 17 million years ago. The first instances of coordination between brain and mind took place, and in his consciousness upon the physical plane, the man could register that he had a mind and that he was an individuality. The sense of I-ness grew. Okay, so I think we've explored the possible discrepancies there. The sun was in that sign when hierarchy began its approach in order to stimulate the forms of life upon our planet. From the planetary viewpoint, from the planetary perspective, Sagittarius governed the period of subjective approach, and you wonder whether subjective approach means that which set up the circumstances for the actual individualization, which was later, millions of years later, recognized by the consciousness of the human being. So I guess what we have to determine is whether we're dealing with a great age of Sagittarius or whether we're dealing with a lesser age, and the subjective approach occurred Sagittarius, Scorpio, Libra, Virgo, followed by individualization in Leo, which was completed in Gemini, which would have made a half circle of the zodiac from Sagittarius completed in Gemini. That would make sense, too. Yes, let's take a look up here, because I think he says that it was in Gemini when the final crisis took place. So if we look at smaller precessional ages, instead of introducing the idea of the big one, then we have a period of some 7 times 2500, a period of some, well, let's say, between 15,000 and 17,000 years for the entire process to occur. DK tells us we can't do much with these figures. I know some people who have tried valiantly to do that. But we will be given the information when we need it. The sun was in Leo when physical plane individualization took place as a result of the applied stimulation. And we can ask, was this 10,000 years before individualization? We can ask that. All right. The sun was in Gemini when the approach was consummated by the founding of the hierarchy on Earth. Now, you know, hierarchy was not here, as we understand hierarchy, which were the great beings accompanying Sanat Kumara 3 million years later, after the first Sagittarian approach. It seems there is some repetition going on here. We have two signs mentioned. They are Leo and Gemini, and apparently Leo and Gemini. So we know that hierarchy was founded about 18 million years ago with the coming of the Lords of the Flame. And we are told that man awakened to himself, came to himself when the sun was in Leo, 3 million years plus after the time the sun was in Leo, when he was individualized at the 21 million year period. So at first we have, at the 21 million year period, we have physical individualization finally consummated in Gemini, and then we have 3 million years plus later, man awakening to himself in Leo, and the approach of the hierarchy consummated in Gemini, because after all, it was, as man was awakening to the fact that I am, hierarchy 18 million years ago was approaching. So I think that puts everything into the proper chronology. The sun was in Gemini when this approach was consummated by the founding of the hierarchy on the Earth. Hierarchy was not founded on the Earth 21 million years ago, and if there was a hierarchical approach at that time, it was the creative hierarchy of solar angels. So this is one of the great secrets which the Masonic rituals, you know, in a way ruled very much by Gemini, typify. For the symbol of the sign Gemini is the source of the concept of the two pillars so familiar to Masons. Okay, so I hope we have that picture of an original event under Sagittarius, a kind of subjective approach, then individualization, physical individualization occurring when the sun was in Leo and consummated when the sun was in Gemini, the final crisis of individualization during that 21 million year ago period when the sun was in Gemini, then go forward another 3.5 million years or so, and you have the sun again in Leo, man awakens to himself, and then the hierarchy is coming. They are arriving from the Venus globe of the Venus chain in the Earth scheme, and that is consummated with the founding of hierarchy when the sun is in Gemini, presumably 18 million years ago. One of the great secrets of the Masonic ritual, because in a way, Masonry signals to us that hierarchy has come to Earth, has opened the door for animal man to progress and walk through eventually the pillars of wisdom, go through the pairs of opposites and enter the temple of initiation. And even in Lemurian times, the temple of initiation existed, although the initiations offered were very primitive compared to what we now expect as the true monastic initiations, starting with the birth of the Christ in the heart. I think it's necessary to read D.K. so carefully, because in the way he uses his language, a straightforward interpretation is not always possible. Okay, so we have physical plane individualization when the sun is in Leo, and maybe a long time later, one Gemini period did follow that physical individualization, but now comes another Gemini period much, much later, as far as I can see, with the actual founding of the hierarchy on Earth 18 million years ago. All right. I hope that's clear. It's certainly clearer to me. Leo governs the EA degree. DK has used these words, so it does mean entered apprentice. And in a way, the very first initiation of humanity, of animal man, is becoming the self-conscious human being. This was achieved 18 million years ago, although Leo also governed the first physical individualization, which was not registered by animal man. The tiny babe knew not, how does it say? The tiny babe knew not the great event. Okay. Gemini governs the FC degree. I'm not sure why they draw them this way. A fellowcraft degree. It is the degree involving the second aspect of divinity, and it is connected with the astral body, just the way the EA degree is connected more with the physical body. We become an entered apprentice in relation to the star Sirius at our fifth initiation. And we become, I suppose, an FC, fellow craft, in relation to the star Sirius at our sixth initiation, and maybe something of a master mason at the seventh initiation, which is also, from the Syrian point of view, the transfiguration. But really, there's more to master mason than the third degree, really. As a matter of fact, master mason degree transcends the third degree. There are other degrees to be inserted, such as the mark degree. That has more to do with the third initiation. Master mason has more to do with actual mastership. It's given in two parts, and one involves the crucifixion and the other involves mastership. And Sagittarius, it says, governs the degree of the master mason. There should be like triangular dots there. Up to the episode of the raising of the master. And Capricorn governs the final part of that ceremony, which is the HRA degree. It's sometimes called the Holy Royal Arch. All of this information, of course, is easily available to anyone who wants to research the matter. It's not a deep, dark secret, but of course, the actual procedures of the initiation ceremonies are not for public consumption. They are retained among Masons, generally speaking. So Sagittarius Capricorn is a unit governing Master Mason and Holy Royal Arch, and that is the climax, the peak of attainment. And by that time, mastership, or the symbol of mastership, has been reached. So the fourth and the fifth degrees are symbolized there. The FC degree is really a symbol of the second degree. The mark degree is the symbol of the third. And Sagittarius Capricorn involves the fourth and the fifth degrees, with the two ceremonies, Master Mason and Holy Royal Arch, HRA, being contiguous. Of course, in Masonic lodges, they're never given all together. One still has more work to do after the Master Mason degree before being able to apply for participation in that final degree. As Masonry has evolved these days, many degrees have been written. The Scottish Rite exists, the York Rite exists. 32 degrees have been written, and let's see, 30 of them go beyond the first 3 degrees of the Blue Lodge. So borrowing from the York Rite and from the Scottish Rite, the York Rite usually being considered to consist of so-called Christian degrees, we are able to bring together 5 major degrees: the Entered Apprentice, the Fellow Craft, the Mark degree, the Master Mason degree, and the HRA degree. DK has written a fair bit about this in his book, what's it called? It's the Foster Foster Bailey book, The Spirit of Masonry. It is always confusing to the beginner who has not yet developed and trained intuition to reconcile the seeming discrepancies and apparent contradictions which appear in the teaching of the ageless wisdom. There D.K. says it. You know, he says it for all of us, and for as long as we will be studying his work, there are seeming discrepancies and there are apparent contradictions. And these are the results of the limitations of our own intuition, our own reasoning power, our own experience. The same difficulty will be met with in the science of astrology, and some reference to the matter is in order at this point. How to reconcile the seeming discrepancies and apparent contradictions. I always use those words where I try to. I don't ever say, this is a contradiction, and I don't mean to say that. This is an apparent contradiction, I usually say, or a seeming contradiction. I have to train myself to do that. I think we all do. So the same difficulty is met in the science of astrology. I would remind you of the occult truism, which states that interpretation and right understanding are based upon the stage of development of the individual. This is, of course, the basis of illusion. So many people have a limited mind and consciousness and interpret according to their perception and understanding, but their interpretation is seen as erroneous by more fully developed minds and broader, deeper consciousnesses. HPB remarked in The Secret Doctrine that for some people, the highest principle of which they can be consciously aware might be a very low one for another person. I mean, you know, the masters live in the world of Atma Buddhi Manas, and we talk about what they might mean, and on occasion may be fleetingly touched by the vibrations which are associated with them. So we do not have full awareness of that realm in which they consistently live. And certainly, you know, look at the animal, even our pet dog or whatever, what do they know of our thinking process or of the intuition, etc.? What do they know? Let's see something here. Yeah, that's it. Okay. The constellations and the planets which govern them, people, I suppose, may and do have one effect upon the mass, ruled by Cancer and the Moon, and another upon the average individual man, and still a third effect upon the disciple or initiate. There's a whole range of possible responses to the various planets and signs of the zodiac, and all depends upon the quality of the form receiving impression. Let's put that down. All depends upon the quality of the form receiving impression. As the various energies and forces circulate throughout the etheric body of our solar system, their reception and effect will depend upon the state of the planetary centers. Now, that can be the planets themselves considered as centers, or the centers within the planets, and upon the point of unfoldment of the centers in the individual man. Our planet has the same number of chakras in a way as does the individual man, and only certain of them are developed, and not all zodiacal energies, or even energies from fellow planets in the system, can be correctly received by our planetary logos. Such is his stage of development. He's not quite there yet. So only certain centers in our planetary logos are active, and those that are active are maybe not fully unfolded because our planetary logos is still non-sacred. He's not a sacred planet. He's not a an initiate of high degree among the planetary logoi. Really, he's only a first degree initiate. He's working towards his second cosmic initiation. That is not too high an initiation among the planetary logoi, and the sacred planets and synthesizing planets are more highly advanced, although some of the greater planets are less fully unfolded. Their nature is less fully unfolded in our solar system than it will be later. Okay, so the reception and effect of these various energies will depend upon the state of the planetary centers and upon the point of unfoldment of the centers of the individual man, and all of us are very different in that respect. For some of us, doors are closed. For others, doors are open. It all depends on chakric sensitivity. And that is why, says the Tibetan, the various charts and tabulations can differ so widely, and different planets can appear as ruling the constellations. He's making a case for the esoteric rulers, case for the esoteric rulers and hierarchical rulers. There seems to be no fixed rule, and the student gets bewildered. Well, the mind tries to achieve a definite fixity to preserve its sense of organization, but the truth is much more fluid. So after we've passed through the stage of mental fixity and have clarity and organization, we might be able to venture into the true fluid relationships of things without becoming confused. So planets, different planets are conduits for different ranges of qualities within the constellations. I mean, let's say, from the constellation Aries, let us say, the constellational lord of Aries, certain types of energies can pass through the planet Mars. But different energies still related to Aries can pass through the planet Mercury, and still higher and different energies can pass through the planet Uranus. Not all of the wide range of zodiacal energies can pass through each of the three rulers. And when you look at Mars, Mercury, and Uranus, there are different degrees within the energies received by each of them. Like, there may be low Aresian qualities passing through Mars, or higher, or middling. And the same for Mercury, and the same for Uranus. So it's a very complex and fluid picture of changing relationships, and only a lot of experience with these energies and with the forms of life affected by the energies can help us keep track of them and not lose our way. So, as DK says, there's seems to be no fixed rule, and the student gets bewildered. Orthodox astrology posits one set of planetary rulers, and they are correct as far as the mass of humanity is concerned. And they are even correct as far as we are concerned, because although they are superseded by the esoteric rulers, they are not entirely superseded. And their the responses which they rule are added to the responses which the esoteric rulers rule. So the superseding is not complete, but the greater gathers in the lesser. And I suppose we might be able to say that the hierarchical ruler gathers in the types of responses which are associated with both the orthodox and the esoteric rulers. The greater always includes the lesser. DK goes on, but the disciple who lives above the diaphragm, so, you know, in other words, basically what he's saying here, the mass, you know, let's get that straight, the mass lives below the diaphragm. He's saying that. And so the solar plexus is the brain for such, and the solar plexus with its sixth ray, its association with both Mars and Neptune, is very connected with the sign Cancer, which is the ruler of the mass consciousness. But the disciple who, and I think all disciples do, who lives above the diaphragm responds to another combination. In other words, it's the combination of both the orthodox ruler and the esoteric ruler added, and maybe even some impression from the hierarchical ruler. But the disciple who lives above the diaphragm responds to another combination, and it is with these that I shall principally deal. So DK is trying to instruct us concerning how we can respond to the higher aspects of zodiacal potential, aspects higher than those we are likely to respond to, ruled only by the exoteric ruler of the zodiacal sign. I'm sure that many of us, you know, we know what the esoteric ruler of our sun sign may be. We know what the esoteric ruler of our rising sign may be, and we have thought about that, and we have said, look, do I respond only to the exoteric ruler? Like, if I'm a Cancer rising person, do I respond only to the moon? Do I not also respond to Neptune? If I'm a Sun and Aries individual, do I respond only to Mars as the ruler of Aries? Do I not also respond to Mercury? In my own case, Mercury is in Aries. It's at the top of the chart, and it's the esoteric ruler of my sun sign. I certainly have recognized in myself the response to Mercury. As a matter of fact, all of these webinars and talking through the books and all of that are very much the result of an elevated Mercury in Aries as the esoteric ruler of the sun sign. Anyway, that is why the three charts here given do not appear to coincide. They are drawn up to express the situation in regard to three groups. Well, three charts. I think by that he means the rulers, three types of rulers in relation to any sign of the zodiac. So these charts or tabulations, which are following, are drawn up to express the situation in regard to three groups. Okay, the first, the exoteric ruler, the mass of people who conform to orthodox and recognized astrological conclusions, and presumably those who live below the diaphragm. Diaphragm. Difficult word to spell. Okay, then come the disciples and advanced individuals conforming to the conclusions of esoteric astrology. And when esoteric astrology is introduced, then automatically the esoteric rulers of the signs are introduced, and we have to learn how to respond to them and fuse their energies with the higher potentials of the orthodox ruler. I think when we think about ourselves, we will realize we have not necessarily ceased to respond to the exoteric ruler of our sun sign, or even our rising sign, but hopefully we have begun to respond to the more positive aspects of that exoteric ruler. And then the third aspect of the tabulation is the creative hierarchies, giving the interim situation in this world cycle, whatever a world cycle may be. The creative hierarchies have certain relationships, certain connections to the signs of the zodiac. How big is a world cycle? Is it a round or a is it a kalpa? Is it a mahakalpa? Mahakalpa. Well, something of that nature. We're never told what that world cycle or world period is exactly. Sometimes we learn that the name world period or world cycle is applied to a specific duration of time. but we cannot be sure that DK always means that particular duration of time when he mentions the word, world period, or world cycle. Okay, so let us see here. Next. Okay, now we reach this big tabulation. This is something that so many of us have studied, I'm sure. excuse me, when we first picked up the Esoteric Astrology book, we wondered at these alternative rulerships. We tried to figure out what they meant. We memorized them. Probably some of us have completely memorized them, which is good for an esoteric astrologer. I would say not only good, absolutely necessary. Notice he says here the constellations and the planetary rulers. He's talking about the lords of the constellations and the lords of the planets which relate to each other. So, I wonder, I can see that that this needs maybe a little bit of adjustment here. So I'll just turn this off for a second and I'll make these adjustments so it's easier to see. Okay, we're dealing here, I think it's better to look in the Esoteric Astrology book because they're laid out quite well. And we're dealing with the tabulation for the orthodox astrological relationships, constellations and planetary rulers in connection with ordinary man. So the constellation is listed. And I think what we really should have here is the idea, same ruler. The ruler is way over on the other side. Constellation, ruler, ray, and related to. So the constellation, the first one is Aries. Its ruler is Mars. Mars is a six-ray planet, probably in its personality, because I think when we are dealing with the non-sacred planets, their personality rays are given. That's the hint, because we see Earth is given. I guess Earth is never an orthodox ruler unless perhaps a co-ruler of Taurus in a way. It has a particular relationship to the constellation Taurus. Aries and Scorpio are related because they are both ruled by Mars. Mars is non-sacred, therefore italicized. probably I will not linger for a long time on these particular relationships because we'll be dealing with them all through the book. The constellation is Taurus. Its orthodox ruler is Venus. It conveys, in the soul sense, I believe, the fifth ray. And the other planet ruled by Venus is Libra, so Taurus and Libra have a strong connection. Notice the angle of 150 degrees. Separating Aries and Scorpio if you move clockwise through the zodiac, and the angle of 150 degrees separating Taurus and Libra if you move counterclockwise. So the fifth ray is found through Venus in relation to both of these signs. With Gemini, the orthodox ruler is Mercury. It is, from the solar perspective, I believe, a fourth ray. A fourth-ray planet, and it's related to Virgo in a square. Virgo is also exoterically ruled by Mercury. These, of course, I think you are quite familiar with if you studied a little bit of astrology, but the relations are always very important. And in many ways, the great science is the science of relations, and astrology seems to be an aspect of this science of relations. Cancer is ruled by the moon, which is considered a non-sacred planet, thus italicized. The moon is the veil for an undiscovered non-sacred fourth-ray planet, and it has no relation. There is no other constellation ruled in the exoteric sense by the moon. It's out of relation. Leo is ruled by the sun. Of course, you can't really say the sun is non-sacred. The sun is the most sacred logos in the whole solar system. But we are talking about the sun as a veil for an undiscovered second ray, non-sacred planet. And there is no other constellation which is ruled by the sun. With the moon, there is. I mean, in the hierarchical sense, Aquarius, in the esoteric sense, Virgo, but not the sun. The sun rules only in Leo, and so we begin to think that the constellation Leo has a very special and unique relationship to our particular solar logos. Virgo, this is just a reversal of what we saw above. Mercury is the ruler. Libra, a reversal of what we saw above, the Libra-Taurus relationship. Scorpio, a reversal of what we saw above, the Scorpio-Aries relationship. Now we enter the realm of Jupiter. Jupiter, we have Sagittarius relating to Pisces. Both are ruled exoterically by Jupiter, and Jupiter from the solar perspective is, I believe, that's the hypothesis anyway, the sacred planets, when they are given a ray, the soul ray is what is given. So Sagittarius relating to Jupiter, relating to Pisces, both ruled by Jupiter, and down here we see the same in reverse, Pisces, ruled by Jupiter, related to Sagittarius, they are a square apart, just the way Gemini and Virgo are a square apart. That's a unique relationship because the mutable cross is given, and these planets, these signs ruled by the same planet, are a square apart and form the mutable cross. Capricorn is ruled by Saturn in the orthodox sense, and no other constellation is ruled by Saturn in the orthodox sense. Saturn is expressing the third ray, perhaps from the soul level. We certainly know that Saturn expresses the third ray monadically. If you turn to Esoteric Psychology, Volume 1, page 420, you will see the monadic, the deeply esoteric rays of the first three planets, Uranus ray 1, Neptune ray 2, Saturn ray 3. Aquarius, in the orthodox sense, is ruled by the highly unorthodox planet, Uranus, which conveys from the solar perspective the seventh ray. And there is no other constellation ruled by Uranus exoterically, and so we have, you know, different relationships are established from the exoteric perspective. We have Mars Scorpio, we have Taurus Libra, we have Gemini Virgo. They all have rulers that are related to the two, identical in the two. Sagittarius, Pisces, rulers that are shared, but not Capricorn, not Aquarius. So this is the, these are the exoteric rulers with which we are largely familiar, and of course, you know, you have to say there will be a relationship between Mars and Aries. One is more an external battle, one's more an internal battle, perhaps. Taurus and Venus are both related in terms of the appreciation of beauty and balance. They both have the eye. Gemini and Virgo are related through intelligence of Mercury. And Jupiter, rather Sagittarius and Pisces, are both related to by the expansion of contact, the expansion of consciousness ruled by Jupiter. The others have no relation. Okay. Now let's take a look at the next tabulation, and what is said here. The non-sacred planets are italicized. Remember, there are five of them, and they usually are connected with the development of the personality rather than relating the personality to the soul. In point B, all the rays are represented except the first. This is interesting as the mass of people move within their horoscopes and the will aspect is latent but unexpressed. So it is the will that makes a great difference in how we live our lives, and when we're on the common or mutable cross, we are pretty well driven up and down the land. We are forced by certain currents of energy to respond in a particular way, and we cannot oppose those streams of influence by our will. We pretty much are compelled, and that's why the first ray is missing. As DK says, this is interesting. Tabulation 5, we are looking at unorthodox astrological relationships. We are looking at constellations and planetary rulers, as in the previous case. But these are in connection with disciples and initiates. And it's interesting that the esoteric rulers that we're now going to look at apply also to initiates. Initiates of what degree? First or second? But maybe the true meaning of the word initiate is also being used. And maybe we're talking about the third degree initiate as well. Usually when we're talking about third degree initiates, we begin to be able to think in wholes. Such initiates can think in wholes and can therefore respond to hierarchies as a whole and to the rulers of those hierarchies. But for now, we're dealing with the esoteric rulers. So, constellation ruler, ray, and related to. And this time, notice we're not saying same sign. Above, we said same ruler. Same ruler. We were talking about a planet. So we connected the different signs according to a ruler which they shared. Really, this should be over here, but I'm not sure I can make it happen. Well, maybe I did make it happen. Yeah, I did make it happen. Okay. Same ruler. So the signs are united by ruler. But now, here below, the ray is preeminent. Same ray. And when we're dealing with astrology and rayology, the ray seems to take prominence. The ray is a higher order of energy than the planet itself. The planet is used by the ray. Well, in a way, the planets are related to the sources of the rays, which for our purposes are the seven stars of the Big Dipper. And the seven stars are the prototypes of these planetary logoi. So these ray sources are the prototypes, and the ray has the preeminent place. There would be other ways, of course, we might be able to relate them according to ruler as well, but the ray suggests a second ray mode of understanding relationships, and astrology, with its signs and its rulers, suggests a third ray way of understanding relationships. And in our particular second ray solar system, the second ray method is to be followed and considered preeminent. So Aries is ruled by Mercury. Its ray is the fourth. Virgo is also connected to the fourth ray because its esoteric ruler is the moon, which is the fourth ray, expresses the fourth ray, whatever the moon is really expressing, the undiscovered fourth ray planet. Taurus is ruled by Vulcan, and we'll discuss how that is so as we get to the chapters. It's the ray of Vulcan, probably the soul ray, is the first ray. And since Pluto is esoterically ruled by If Pisces is esoterically ruled by Pluto, then the ray is the same. Gemini is esoterically ruled by Venus, but there is no other planet of which we know that distributes the fifth ray. So Gemini here, I hope I said that, Gemini ruled by Venus, Gemini is not related to any other sign via a shared ray. Cancer is ruled esoterically by Neptune, which from the soul perspective expresses the sixth ray. And since Mars is esoterically ruled by, Scorpio is esoterically ruled by Mars, and which is sixth ray, then the sign Cancer and Scorpio are related by the rays of their rulers. Leo is ruled by the Sun, which expresses exoterically the second ray, but Jupiter is the ruler of Aquarius esoterically, and Jupiter expresses the second ray, so Leo and Aquarius are united or related via the second ray. Virgo is ruled by the fourth ray, Moon, and here we have a repetition of its connection to Aries, ruled by fourth ray, Mercury. Libra is ruled esoterically. I have to go slower. I think I'm going to get my tongue tied here. Libra is ruled esoterically by Uranus, the seventh ray, and we know of no other seventh ray planet, per se. Well, you know, there are speculations, but of the planets we know, there are no other seventh ray planets, and so Uranus, Libra, then, is not related to any other sign via the ray. Gemini and Libra, however, are related, as we see in the tabulation on page 332 and 333. So you can turn there if you're interested. Scorpio and Cancer, again, that's repeated. Sagittarius is esoterically ruled by the Earth, and since Capricorn has the esoteric ruler of Saturn distributing the third ray, then they are both related, Sagittarius and Capricorn, through that third ray passing through their two rulers, Earth and Saturn. And then there's the reversal of the same, Capricorn related to Sagittarius via the third ray. This mode of thinking is very important because these are soul connections, or connections which can help bring out the soul. Aquarius and Leo again are repeated, and Pisces and Taurus again are repeated. So this is a different kind of connection via the ray. Now we might have Aries doesn't share any other. It doesn't. Mercury is not the esoteric ruler of anything but Aries, and Vulcan is not the esoteric ruler of anything but Taurus. So, you know, whereas Aries and Scorpio in the first tabulation both shared Mars as the ruler, Aries does not share any ruler, the same ruler, Mercury, with any other constellation esoterically. All right. I think that's pretty clear, but the implications, of course, we must look in the horoscope and attempt to discover how relationships between these planets, between these constellations, may draw out a particular ray. For instance, if we have Leo planets and Aquarius planets, we have to realize that those two signs are related via the second ray and perhaps have an ability esoterically to draw forth the second ray. If we have Aries and Virgo related to each other, we have to realize the esoteric fourth ray relationship and how harmony through conflict may result from the interplay of the two. So it's a different way of thinking. As far as exploring all these ways of thinking, there is still much to be learned. All right, I think we are there. Yes, we certainly are there. let us sound the great invocation now. It's a little bit dark in this room. And I'm not typing too clearly. Yeah, all right. So, from the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men, let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men, may Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. We've completed EAA 30. Let's see. I have to put it here, even though it's not so. We have completed. Right. Yes, this is it. Pluto, Pluto, first ray, etc. We've completed EAA 30 and Esoteric Astrology Adventure 30, and we are on page, 66. I'll work that through. I believe we are on page 66. 66. And if we've gone to 67, I'm not sure. I don't think so. Very soon. Yep, very soon to 67. Okay, and EAA 29 was page 64, so we have moved from page 64 to 66. Okay? Yes. Okay, 64 to 66. And we will carry on with number 31. And continuing with these very, very interesting tabulations, very important tabulations, I guess I appreciated to a greater extent the fact that esoterically, certain signs were ray-related, related by rulers. Okay, so for the time being, we will say farewell and on to number.